The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good morning. We're delighted to welcome you all. This morning we have with us some special guests, although you're all special, of course. We have Heritage Christian High School. Would those students please stand? Thank you for coming this morning. You may be seated. We have Gibraltar High School. Would those students stand, please? We're delighted to see you. You may be seated. And we have Boscobel High School. Would they stand, please? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. These students are here with a national award-winning program that is sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin in this court. Students are invited to come to hear our oral arguments. And if they come, they are provided with the briefs on the case that they will hear. And then at noon, after our second oral argument, they will meet with a justice who will discuss the procedures of the court in taking and hearing cases. They will not discuss the substantive issues of the case. Everyone here is invited to join the students in the discussion with a member of the court. Now, the marshal has summaries of the case we are about to hear. If you would like a summary, just raise your hand and we'll get you one. It's easier to listen to a case if you know something about it. So we have some. Okay. All right. Let me introduce the court to you before I call our case. On our far right is Justice Lewis Butler. Seated next to him is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks, and to his left, Justice Patience Rogensack. You will meet with Justice Rogensack this afternoon at noon. She is the assigned justice for meeting with the students. And on the far left is an empty chair. Justice Annette Ziegler ordinarily sits there, but she will not be participating in this case. I now call the case 06-AP-662, State versus Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation. Arguing on behalf of the state of Wisconsin is Monica Burkett-Brist. And you have 25 minutes and 5 minutes in rebuttal. Counsel?
Thank you. May it please the court. As you now already know, I am Assistant Attorney General Monica Burkett-Brist, and I have the honor of representing the state of Wisconsin in this matter, which seeks to clarify the application of the state's open meeting and public records law to quasi-governmental corporations. This appeal presents the court with the challenge of further refining the test previously employed by the Attorney General to determine whether a corporation is quasi-governmental within the coverage of the state's open meetings law and public records laws. This case presents an issue of first impression and of statewide importance, as well as of direct and immediate importance to the people of Beaver Dam, as well as to the members of the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation. How this court ultimately answers the question of what is meant by the term quasi-governmental corporation in the law will impact the future of how much oversight the public has over entities to which traditional governmental functions are increasingly being delegated. The state respectfully submits that the existing standards set forth in the 1991 Attorney General's opinion concerning the Milwaukee area economic development entities has provided a correct and workable, albeit sometimes cumbersome, framework for analysis. The 1991 opinions multi-factor test has been in place now for over 15 years without legislative enactment to clarify the original statutory language. The legislature's failure to amend the law in response to this now long-standing definition entitles the Attorney General's position, as set forth in the opinion, to be considered part of the authoritative internal legislative history of the enactment, as set forth in Green v. Jones, 23 West 2nd at 558. Also, as set forth in State v. Ludwig, 31 West 2nd at 690. The state would therefore respectfully request that this court use or build on this 1991 opinion's existing definitional standard, improving it as it may seem fit in light of the legal arguments of the various parties in the briefs and what you hear today. Now, although the legislature did not choose to define the term quasi-governmental corporation, the state submits that three things are clear. The first is that the express legislative intent of creating the two laws was to provide the fullest access possible to enable citizens of this state to know what their government is doing. Secondly, that when deciding issues about the law's applicability to specific fact situations involving its coverage, the law should be liberally construed in favor of, not in derogation of, coverage. And that the inclusion of the term quasi-governmental by the legislature in the first place presumes that the legislature had in mind that there would, in fact, be some entities which, while not units of government directly, would be so closely related to and intertwined with governmental bodies that the citizens should have a right to access and to watch the entity at work and access its records in order to ensure accountability.
Council, do you have any idea how many area development corporations there are throughout the state of Wisconsin?
The record, unfortunately, Justice, does not have that number. What I can say to you is I think it's clear from the record and the amici that there are a whole continuum of different types of entities in existence around the state that perform economic development activities. Everything from a completely private entity that has no relationship with government to numerous entities at the city and local level that do perform economic development functions as a direct city function, such as was the case here before the city spun the office into a private economic development corporation.
What is it about this particular corporation that convinces you that indeed the open meeting law and the public records law should apply?
The particular factors that I believe that the state used in its analysis and initially concluding that they felt the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation was a quasi-governmental corporation are the following. First, the corporation is governed by a 20-year cooperative agreement with the city through which the sole source of its income is the receipt of 90% of the city's room tax. The only income this entity receives is the room tax revenue, the city's tax revenue, and interest income on revenue that it invests. The Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation has no client and no other clients and no reasons for existence except to provide the economic development functions for the city of Beaver Dam. It does not have separate business consulting clients, nor does it have other private clients, as was suggested in the amicus brief of the Wisconsin Economic Development Association.
Is it precluded from having any other clients by its agreement?
The terms of the cooperation agreement does not appear to preclude that.
Okay. No, so at the moment they don't have any, but they might in the future.
There does not appear to be anything that would preclude that. Now, the cooperation agreement, which is in the state's appendix in chief, does, however, provide that the city controls very important aspects of the corporation's operations. Each year, under the terms of that contract, that cooperation agreement, the corporation must submit to the city and have approved by the city its annual management plan, which governs its operations. So conceivably, Justice Rogan-Sack, the city could perhaps veto an effort to obtain other private clients if the city felt that was important to do.
Counselor, if you're asking us to determine that the development corporation is a quasi-governmental corporation, is it a quasi-municipal corporation? Is that the type of government corporation you're thinking of?
There are a lot of different quasi-terms that are bandied about in the arguments of the various parties. And in fact, even the treatise which our office relied on, McQuillan's Corporation Law, uses two or three of them just in the context of the definitional standard that the 1991 opinion adopted. There are apparently quasi-municipal corporations, there are quasi-public corporations, and there are quasi-governmental corporations. Obviously, we don't know exactly why the legislature chose the term quasi-governmental. But I believe there is a difference between a municipal corporation and a quasi-municipal corporation and a quasi-governmental one. Quasi-governmental to me and to the state implies a broader scope than simply a quasi-local government entity.
Does it include quasi-municipal? If you have quasi-governmental, would it include quasi-municipal?
I believe it could, and I think, Justice Abrahamson, that if you look at the text further into the McQuillan's definition that was provided, that McQuillan starts out defining quasi-municipal and then goes on to describe quasi-public, which I would submit is the is closer to quasi-governmental than quasi-municipal. And the definition that then the McQuillan's treatise uses to define quasi-public is the close to a government, resembling closely a governmental entity in function, effect, or status. And those three terms were the terms which were then used in the 1991 Attorney General's opinion and relied upon to find that the Milwaukee area entities were, in fact, quasi-government corporations. Returning to Justice Crook's comments earlier, in addition to the items that I've already identified, the city has the ability under the terms of its contract with the Beaver Dam Corporation to upon demand inspect the corporation's books and also is obligated under the terms of the cooperation agreement, the contract, to provide housing for the corporation's offices and to provide all funding for its operating expenses. During the term of this litigation, the corporation made a decision to move out of the city offices it had been housed in. But the terms of the contract still stand as originally drafted and entered into by the parties. And under that contract, the reality is that the city has obligated itself to provide all of the expenses of the entity for its operating purposes.
Does that include their lease expense? Now that they've moved out of City Hall?
I would argue that if the corporation incurs lease expense and chooses to request that the city fund it, that the terms of the cooperation agreement would require the city to do so. I do not know whether or not that request has ever been made, but I would believe that the terms of the contract would enable the corporation to make that request of the city. And finally, and perhaps one of the most important factors to consider, is the fact that the function that the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation provided, and what the record establishes in this case, is that it was providing all the economic development negotiation functions for the city on the city's behalf. The record that you have arises from a series of events in 2005, which related to the development of a very large regional Walmart warehouse in the Beaver Dam area. And regardless of whether or not someone might think that was a good or a bad idea from a public policy standpoint, what occurred and what the records in the appendix establish, in addition, the sealed records, which are part available to the court but not part of the appendix that we filed, established that it was the corporate entity, its executive director, that was actually negotiating such things as fire protection services, zoning variances, the ability, commitment by the city to provide a water source for the development. And even though those matters ultimately came before a city entity for final approval, the reality of the situation is that all that deliberative process and negotiation was conducted by the private entity with the mayor and the city economic development chairperson sitting in their capacity on the private board.
Counselor, was there any document that resulted from those negotiations with Walmart that you're specifically looking for?
Yes. In our appendix to our brief and chief at pages 150 to 155, the court has an affidavit, which I submitted at the trial court level as part of our summary judgment process. That defines documents which we felt were important or that the trial court should look at in its deliberations. Those documents, unfortunately, had been identified by the corporation as being confidential, so I couldn't put them in the appendix. However, they are in the record at docket number, record 43.
Record 43?
Right.
Thank you.
And they include, and you can even see, they include a memorandum of understanding that was going to be executed between the city and Walmart Corporation, and email transmissions between the corporation's executive director acting on the city's behalf, negotiating the direct language of that agreement. And that agreement was prepared for the mayor's signature and was an agreement that was going to be a contractual relationship between the city and Beaver Dam.
So what you wanted to look at was the memorandum of understanding, but you also wanted to get any documents that were the underpinnings of the final agreement that the city was going to sign with Walmart in that memorandum.
Right, and what is also in the record at docket 43 are some samples of minutes of the corporation, which gives the court some idea of the kinds of transactions on the city's behalf the entity was engaged in. So what you would find at record at docket number 43 is the draft of the memorandum with Walmart that I've just alluded to, along with some financial information and various email transmissions, which indicate that what the function the corporation was providing was the negotiating arm of the city in the transaction.
Thank you.
Counsel, could I ask you, if you prevail, how quickly could a citizen or the news media gain access to documents that are being generated in negotiations?
Are you asking from the corporation in this case or in general?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, my understanding of the factual situation as this developed was that citizens in the community were unable to access any information from the corporation. The corporation took the position and has continued throughout this litigation that they are not subject to either the open meetings law or the public records law, and they philosophically believe it would be a bad thing for them to be subject to those laws. The citizens, therefore, and the citizens group that provided the amicus in this case, therefore, actually filed their own action at one point and attempted to get records from the corporation through filing an action with the city, and ultimately did obtain some records. However, the corporation's position, and the reason we're still here today, is that going forward, the corporation would take the position that if someone went and made a public records request of them today, they would provide no records of any kind.
Well,
if those records happen to also be housed at the city, ultimately, potentially an individual could get records through the city.
What I'm trying to get at is, let's say I'm negotiating with Justice Rogensack about some business thing.
Right.
Are they, if I send a proposal down the row here, would that be subject to a disclosure to someone who wanted the document? I mean, right contemporary with the negotiations?
No, in fact, they would not be. And even if the open meetings and public records law applied to the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation, while at the heat of a negotiation is in process, the exceptions under the open meetings and public records law for competitive and bargaining purposes would still protect the confidentiality and the competitive need for confidentiality while that competitive purpose is still in process. The recent Citizens for Responsible Government case involving the Milton and Janesville area made that very clear. Now, obviously, the difference is that in the case of an entity which is subject to the open meetings and public records law, once that need for confidentiality for competitive purposes is over, the transaction is done, the deal is struck. At that point, those records do become part of the public record, and conceivably, if a portion of a meeting had been held in closed session and minutes had been kept, those minutes would also then become available. So the difference is, the state submits that the difference is the protections for the competitive process are in place already under the open meetings and public records law, and many entities around the state function effectively, including Milwaukee, under the terms of the 91 opinion, without having their economic development activities impeded. The difference, though, for the citizens is huge, because at least in a situation in which an entity is under the open meetings and public records law, a citizen has a fighting chance, first of all, while the competitive process is in process, to know that there are meetings being held, and they're being held in closed closed session for competitive reasons and therefore a right to timely challenge that. And when it's all over, they at least have the right to access the information after the fact and engage in some public oversight post hoc.
Counselor, so are you saying that there doesn't have to be any kind of notice of the agenda that's going to be the subject of a closed meeting? Seems to me we had a case about that last year, and we pretty much said the agenda has to be quite specific, even when there are closed meetings.
That's correct. And so the difference in this situation is if the Beaver Dam, using the current situation as an example, if the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation is not a quasi-governmental corporation or otherwise under the open meetings law, none of their meetings have to be subject to public notice of any kind. So a citizen has no right to know when they're meeting or what they're meeting
but
about.
Just say we would agree with you and say they are a quasi-governmental authority, therefore they're subject to the open meetings law. So if they have an out not to have a particular meeting in the open, don't they still have a very significant specificity requirement for the notice of that meeting under our current case law?
Yes, I would agree with that. And in fact, I would agree that that serves an important public purpose, and the public purpose I believe the legislature intended by creating the exception so that they could be in closed session, but at least the public then knows what it is that's important that's going on in their community that is subject
so they
to
could
this
be,
closed session.
The agenda would say closed meeting negotiating with Walmart.
Well, I believe in light of some of the recent decisions that in fact might be what would be required. It would also, of course, have to also indicate what the subsection, of the
law is. And they might have to say negotiating for X site or
well,
more
I,
detail.
Again, I, that's one of those judgment calls that I think communities around the state make every day within the context of the open meetings law. Whether or not they would have to say we're entering into a closed session to negotiate with Walmart or to negotiate for business developments in the city's business park, I think that's where the continuum under your recent appellate decisions really falls into the judgment call the community has
to make.
They
don't have to say $4.64 a square foot or whatever.
Right.
In that detail. All right.
But we have to say something more than licenses now.
Okay.
Right?
All right. We know that, right? We know that.
Yes.
If this falls within open records or open meeting, what effect does that have on other issues like 89380, which protects various, I think the language there is political corporation, government subdivision, or agency. It protects them from suits on intentional torts, and that's the quasi-legislative, quasi-judiciary. So, because I've copied down quasi-municipal, quasi-public corporation, quasi-government corporation, quasi-political corporation, government agency, government subdivision. I mean, those are all terms that are used in a variety of statutes. Maybe Beaver Dam Area Development should try and be a public something or other to protect against, to give them immunity against liability.
Well, that is certainly a value choice that communities face when they enter into this type of a contractual relationship. I think the facts in this record would indicate that the intent of the corporation, and in all likelihood the city as well for that matter, when they entered into this arrangement, was assuming that this was going to be a private entity and it would not be subject to those immunities or, for that matter, to the open meetings and public records law. I think it's pretty clear from the philosophical position of the parties that they saw that ability not to be under the auspices of those laws to be an advantage for them in negotiating with other communities. Otherwise, there would have been no reason, in the history of this particular case, there would have been no reason to close a city economic development office and wholesale farm it out. But to answer your question, Justice, I think the only thing we can do at this point is assume that if a quasi-governmental corporation was intended to be included under 89380, we would have to have trusted the legislature to use that term of art, so to speak. It only shows up in a approximately three or four places in the statute. I believe, and the state's position throughout has been that it is something broader than quasi-municipal. It's intended to put within the scope of the Open Meetings and Public Records Law an entity that is greater than quasi-municipal, but that may not have been the legislature's intent in providing immunities under 89380.
But 89380 provides immunity for an agent of a municipality municipality as well, doesn't it?
Well, it uses the word agency in the law. Whether or not the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation would become an agency under the technical terminology of 89380, I think would be an open question. I would tend to, just off the top of my head thinking this through today, believe not. However, the word agent or an agent of a governmental entity is used in the open meetings law. It is used in the public records law under the coverage of an authority. And so I think there is a difference between being a governmental agency or being an agent of the government. And I think that's the distinction between the two acts.
Let's see what the legislature intended. It seems like no one is talking about what the legislature intended. You want us to come up with some kind of a fancy definition here for test or framework. And can't there be something garnered from the statute itself as to what's meant by a quasi-governmental corporation?
Well, I believe that we can certainly gain from the specific language of the statute that the legislature intended it to be something other than a direct body of government, a direct governmental unit, and something more than what we would call a strictly governmental corporation, which is what we believe the earlier sort of interpretations and the interpretation urged by the opposite side here would be, that something only created by enactment and to which a specific governmental function is delegated. To me, that's a governmental corporation.
Okay,
so means something close to it.
Let me focus my question. I wasn't focused enough. I apologize. The statute says in 1982, definition, defining government body, and it includes a number of things, state or local agency, board, commission, committee, council, etc. Then it gets that is created by constitution, statute, ordinance, rule, or order. And then it gets to the next category, and that's our focus. Governmental or quasi-governmental corporation. Except, now we're not really talking about governmental here. The issue is quasi. Quasi-governmental organization, except for my brother's Center Sports and Entertainment Corporation. That is, except for the Bradley Center Sports and Entertainment Corporation. That was supposed to be humor. That's not my brother at all. But the statute...
I got it.
Did you get it? Anyone get it here?
I didn't get it.
Okay, he didn't get it. Try it again.
But now, why do you need to accept... this covers a governmental body means governmental or quasi-governmental corporation, except for the Bradley Center Sports Entertainment Corporation. There is an argument, it seems to me, which no one is making, that the reason, why do you need to, rules of statutory interpretation. I mean, they are specifically accepting a number of things, including the Bradley Center Sports Entertainment Corporation. Why would they have to accept it if it wasn't included? And if it's included, it surely isn't a governmental entity. It has to be a quasi-governmental entity. So doesn't that give you some, and they list a couple of other things, the Olympic Ice Training Center under 42.11.3 and other things. So doesn't that give you some indication of how broad the legislature was thinking these quasi-governmental agencies may be? Am I wrong in that? No one's advancing that argument. Looking at the words of the statute, everyone forgets it.
I see my time has expired, but with
you
your permission, I'll try to
question.
Give you a quick answer that's not a quasi-answer, hopefully. I think that you are absolutely correct that we have to assume that the legislature had some reason for putting those exceptions in the statute. Unfortunately, none of those amendments have any, you know, legislative history that helps us,
well,
except
look at the
that
words.
one would assume, and I would agree with you, Justice Burley, that one would assume that the exception would not have been put in there unless there was a concern that without it, the entity would have been considered a quasi-governmental corporation. And that is a relatively broad laundry list of types of entities. I would agree with you.
What's the organization of Bradley? Do we know?
I don't have that in front of me, Justice Abramson.
Okay. You can check it out.
Right.
Probably Thank have good lobbyists.
Thank you very much.
Council representing Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation. Tell me how to pronounce your name.
My name is Michael Cheslevich, and I represent the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation in this case. Not only do the parties seek different results in this case, we also, I think, come to this court with somewhat different agendas. The Attorney General asked this court, frankly, to do what the legislature failed to do and what it should have done, and that is define quasi-governmental corporation for all of us. So the Attorney General turns to this court and asks the court to substitute that definition. In doing so, the Attorney General also asks for a nice, tidy definition it can use as almost a cookie-cutter type situation across the state to apply to these type of corporations. Now, for my client's purposes, frankly, we are not so interested in being a catalyst for the Attorney General to do its heavy legislative lifting through this court. Rather, we tend to agree with former Attorney General Doyle when he concluded that this should be a fact-based test on a case-by-case basis. And quite frankly, we don't believe that this court can do any more. Now, this court, or the state, paints a very broad brush case here and raises the very laudatory and historical purposes of the open records, open meeting law. We have never challenged those purposes. However, we think the question here is much narrower. The question is simply, is Beaver Dam Development Corporation subject to the open meetings law in the first place? To put it more directly, is it a quasi-governmental body? The scope of the statute, statute states a declared purpose of the statute, which quite rightly indicates that the people have a true and genuine interest in the affairs of government. But that really puts the cart before the horse. The real question is this government? Or more particularly, is this quasi-government? Unfortunately, the legislature doesn't give us much direction for that. Now, quasi is one of those words in the English language that never stands alone. You never hear someone say he or she is quasi or that company is quasi. It always has to modify something. And in this case, it modifies government. So it's quasi-governmental. To us, that means that the statute must imply or require that an entity such as the BDADC, and I'll refer to the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation as BDADC, that it has some indicia of government.
Well, counsel, let me ask you about that. I'm looking at the definition of quasi taken from the 8th edition of Black's Law Dictionary. And it reads as follows. Seemingly, but not actually, in some sense, resembling nearly. Now, if you apply that definition to government, what does that give you?
I think it gives you a definition that, or an indication that powers reserved to city government in some way must have been transferred to the corporation in this case in order for it to be quasi-governmental. If this corporation...
That would seem to be consistent with the older cases, mm-hmm. but I'm not so sure that that's consistent with the 1991 test that was
I'm not
pronounced
so sure.
by then-Attorney General Doyle.
The Attorney General makes the point that the legislature did not take any action after the 1991 opinion of Attorney General Doyle. However, the legislature didn't take any action after the 1977 and 1984 opinions of Attorney Generals La Follette and Hanawa either. So one might argue that those are still the test in the law. We don't really know what the test, I think, is. But I think there has to be some governmental purpose, some governmental action for the corporation in order for it to be quasi-governmental.
And the reason I asked the question is because, and I was this was the question I was going to ask opposing counsel. It seemed from reading the briefs that the two parties were not that far apart on the test that you wanted. You just disagreed on how to apply it. But it sounds from your argument that you may be closer than I assumed to the realtor's position that was taken in their amicus brief.
Our position is not totally adverse to the state on the standard. However, we are perhaps more circumscribed in the way we view that standard. Factually, we believe that there are just two key questions that should be first answered before we delve into any further factual exploration. The first question is, who controls the day-to-day operations of the Development Corporation? And the second is, what power, if any, does the Development Corporation have to bind the city in any way? Does it have any kind of sovereign power?
Counsel, I didn't see, I saw that argument in the amicus brief. I didn't see that argument in your brief. I saw your argument on page 20, to be specifically, taking offense that the state would characterize your argument as preferring the earlier line of Attorney General's opinions. And you seem to indicate that, no, it is the 1991 Attorney General opinion on page 20 and continuing on 21 that is the appropriate standard. And then you spend the next many pages taking each one of those factors and applying it, and your application comes to the conclusion that it's not quasi-governmental. Number one, did I miss something in your brief? Did you argue the power and control in your brief?
I think the power to control is certainly implied. It is not stated the same way I stated it here.
Okay. Number two, am I correct that you are not embracing the 1977 Attorney General opinion, but rather think that the 1991 newer standards should be applied?
We do not believe the 1977 opinion in respect to that, stating that the corporation must have been created, incorporated by the state, is necessarily the correct one.
Which one is the 1991 the correct one?
I don't know which is the correct one. I don't have an answer for you, Justice, simply because the legislature didn't provide that to us.
Let me put it in the converse. Are you arguing that 1991 is not the correct one?
I am arguing that the key questions to be answered here are issues of day-to-day control and powers of government.
Well,
we have to then apply those standards. And I don't think the 1991 opinion was wrong in what it did, in the factual. Let me put it this way. I think the bottom line in the 1991 opinion is that this has to be a fact-based inquiry on a case-by-case basis. And here are some inquiries that should be made to try to come to some conclusion and divine what the legislature intended by quasi-government. I don't have the answer for you that that is the final word or that is the definition. After all, the legislature didn't do it. There was a legislative council this year that tried to do it. They couldn't come up with it. The Attorney General Office itself, in their 2003 guidance, which is on the website, says there is no clear-cut test for determining whether a particular corporation resembles a governmental corporation closely enough to be considered quasi-governmental. So even the Attorney General in 2003 seems to be backing off in saying that the 1991 standard is the standard. In their guidance that's on the website, they say there's no clear-cut test. So we're left to try to, I think, answer particular fact-based questions to come to a particular conclusion.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you saying that the only questions are who controls and who has the power to bind? Are you saying those
not at all. I'm saying those are the key standards, and once we go beyond those, we have to answer questions such as these. who created the corporation?
Okay.
Who controls it? Who are the officers and directors of the corporation? Who appoints those officers? Who appoints the directors? Is the board of directors self-perpetuating? You know, in the 1991 opinion and the Milwaukee case, those officers of the corporation were all appointed by city officials. A large part of the board of directors was appointed by city officials. There was a great deal of city control of the Milwaukee Economic Development Corporation. That is simply not the factual case here. Here, the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation is privately incorporated by a private citizen. Its board of directors is 12 in number, 10 of whom are all private citizens. It's a self-perpetuating board. The city has no say whatsoever who is on the board, with the exception of the two ex officio members, the mayor and the committee member. The officers of the corporation are all appointed by the board of directors. The city has no say in who appoints and who are the officers of the corporation. No city employee has ever served as an officer in this corporation.
Council, why shouldn't one of the questions be something like this? Why not follow the money? And as I understand the money in this situation, 90% of the room tax goes to this corporation. 84% of the revenues received by this corporation are supplied by the room tax of the city. Why not have that as a key question?
If that is the key question, and if that is the only question, if that is the standard, that we follow the money, if there's $1 of tax money involved, then frankly I lose. Because the BDADC does get its funding from the room tax. But none of the Attorney General opinions, not the 77, the 84, the 91, none of them said that the tax issue was outcome determinative. They all said it's something to consider. We look at where the money comes from. But it certainly is not the end all to say that this is a quasi-governmental.
But it is a consideration.
Pardon?
You agree that it is a consideration?
It is. Everyone, quite rightly, has an interest in their taxes, how taxes are spent. But I will also argue that there is accountability for those public funds built into the process, at least in Beaver Dam.
Are you doing anything other than the city's business?
I guess it depends on what you call the city's business. Let me put it this way. There's so much focus on that Walmart case. That is an exceptional situation. There isn't a situation like that that comes along every year, every 10 years. On a day-to-day basis, the Development Corporation will give advice and counsel to many small businesses. If a business in Madison wants to expand to Beaver Dam, they may come to the Development Corporation and get information, discuss their business plan with them in private, get information about the labor force, labor statistics, the business climate, and they will help that business if it chooses to locate in Beaver Dam. That does not require any city funds, any going to the city for any TIF. It's simply helping that company come to Beaver Dam. In a sense, that is, I guess, our client. We don't have a contract with them, but those companies will come to us, or those businesses or individuals, on a private basis, want to discuss their business plan in private with the understanding it's not going to be divulged to the public at large or a competitor.
What's your purpose under your articles or bylaws? Bylaws, rather.
The purpose is to assist in economic development within the city limits of the city of Beaver Dam. That's it in a nutshell.
Is that distribution center in the city?
I believe it is. I was not involved in handling that case. I don't know its exact location, but I believe it is, or at least largely.
Counsel, I'm sorry.
What harm would come from making the records public after the fact?
Confidentiality, really, of business information. Companies, whether they're large or small, I think are reluctant to divulge business plans if they are going to be known to competitors. There is a real interest, I think, in when a company wants to expand or enter into a geographical area, it does have legitimate business reasons. to, at least in the negotiation stage, to obtain information and to discuss in confidence with individuals within that area what the business climate is, what the labor statistics are like, what the prospects are. And in doing so, there has to be this free exchange of information. I would think that if an organization like the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation was subject to open records, open meetings, and had to divulge at a very early stage on an agenda or whatever, that it was negotiating or at least facilitating some type of development, it could have a negative effect on those companies coming to the area or divulging information in that kind of manner.
Wouldn't it restrict also the way in which you could meet with companies that are seeking information? Because if you met with more than a given number of persons from the board, you'd have to give notice, so you couldn't meet kind of informally with companies, could you?
That is true, but in all candor, Justice, I would have to say that much of the work done by the particular Beaver Dam Development Corporation is done by its executive vice president. He's the only paid employee. So I can't say it would never happen that there would be a meeting with the entire board, and certainly that would have to be noticed, or certain members of the board that might constitute a quorum. But in all frankness, most of the work is done simply by its one
employee. By him.
Counsel, if I could, I don't know the answer to this question, which is why I'm asking it, obviously. But in response to the question, in your response, you indicated some concern about how breaching this confidentiality might hurt business development in an area. Did I hear you correctly in that response?
Hurt in the sense that it may restrict or make companies, whether large or small, coming into an area less willing to divulge its business plan, less willing to divulge particulars at particular stages in that negotiation. So it could have some.
And the reason they would be less willing to divulge is it might encourage competition from other competitors that might look at what they're doing and say, well, let's go in that area as well.
Or particularly if a deal falls through. You know, not everything comes to fruition and is built. I'm assuming this now, but there must be times when businesses come and there's discussion. It hopes to be fruitful, but for whatever reason, nothing comes of it. If we are subject to the open records, open meetings law, there would be an argument that those records, once the deal is ended or the discussions are ended, someone is going to make a request for those records. That requester may be a competitor. And at that point, it would seem to me that there would be a retarding effect on those businesses divulging or wanting to have those frank discussions about their business plan if they knew it might someday fall in the hands of competitors.
The corporation was created in about 1997, is
yes.
That right?
Yes.
Do you know whether it was devised in response to the 1991 opinion? I mean, was that taken?
I understand that the documents were drafted by attorneys with Foley and Lardner and that they took great pains to assure, and it's stated right in the documents, that this is to be considered a private corporation and not a governmental corporation. I don't know if they specifically looked at the 91 opinion as opposed to the 77 or 84 opinions and tried to fashion it in that way. I don't know. But I do know that it was drafted in such a way that great pains were taken to make sure it would be a private corporation.
Counsel, the statute has an interesting provision. It says 1939, section 19.39. Any person may request advice from the AG as to the applicability of this subchapter. Under any circumstances, the AG may respond, which leads me to think that the AG's opinions have maybe more persuasive weight in this kind of case than they would ordinarily, because the legislature, which you correctly state, don't doesn't define many of the terms. It seems as if they put that interpretive gloss first on the AG and then on this court. I mean, you don't deny that this court has jurisdiction in this case.
I don't. I know the amici raised the issue of constitutionality, and frankly, that issue does cause us some significant concern.
Yeah, but we decide constitutionality, so the court has jurisdiction over
yes.
the case.
Yes.
If this court didn't hear a case just because the statute didn't define terms, we could reduce our docket by maybe two-thirds to three-quarters and maybe 90%. Which the court might think is a very good idea.
And I don't know.
I don't know if the public would think that's a very good idea. So the court has
to raise the issue below, Judge.
I know. The court has to decide what legislation means, even when terms are not defined.
Certainly.
So I noticed, at least when I looked at your briefs, no one cited 1939. Do you interpret that as I do?
I have not looked at that question, but I think another interpretation would be that the Attorney General's office, or at least the district attorney's offices, have certain enforcement rights. Individuals can bring a private cause of action, mm-hmm. but I think there is provisions in the statute for at least an initial review by either a district attorney or the Attorney General's office. And I think at least my sense of that would be that that provision is in there because of that oversight that they have. I don't know that it is meant to give them a particular insight into what the legislature meant by quasi-governmental.
Counsel, your opposing counsel focuses on the 1991 Attorney General opinion and then says, but we realize, you know, it may not be without some infirmity. And so then points to McQuillan and the McQuillan function, effect, and status approach, considering factors. And I see the amicus says, you know, if I recall, McQuillan function, effect, and status test with factors, the factors espoused by the state, but then in addition throw in the control and power factors that you talked about earlier. Number one, if you know, what is the function, effect, and status test? Number two, do you think that should be employed by this court in this case?
I think the function, effect, and status test really comes down to function. What does the corporation do on a day-to-day basis? And that was my first standard of who controls the day-to-day operations. That is its function. Status is, as a quasi-governmental body, does it have indicia of government? What is its status in that respect? This corporation has not even anything close to any type of municipal power or sovereign power. It cannot bind the city of Beaver Dam in any respect.
What if any, in the inquiry? Because, you know, what we have to come up with a test that's just right, you know. One side might argue this way and another side might argue that way. But in some ways, what we need as a court is assistance from counsel in telling us what's just the right test, not what's necessarily the test that on the edges. I'm a member of the public. I live in, let's say, pick a place, Appleton, Wisconsin. And I look at an entity that's a development corporation, and I know, because I heard, that all of the money comes from our room taxes. Okay? That's how they're funded. They happen to have their office in City Hall. I go on the computer and look at their website for the city of Appleton, and sure enough, bingo, there is the development corporation, so I can go in and read, you know. I think it's a reasonable expectation for the citizenry to think that there's some involvement. If you know all their funding comes from the city, they are housed in the city, and they're on the city's website. Now, that might not be the total inquiry, but how does that come into status? You're talking about just legal status, or how does perception come into to this whole inquiry, because this is about the public's access, right? So
perception is important, but perception is also somewhat of a dangerous thing sometimes, because perceptions are not always right. And this court, I think,
should... Well, how about if they're quasi-right?
Well, even if they're quasi-right. I trust this court will not base its standard or its definition on a perception. It has to be based upon some standard. For example, there are, and I would urge caution here, because there are other entities, other nonprofits, that operate in this same type of format, but in a different arena. I do some work for a nonprofit in Fond du Lac, which is an assistance to victims of sexual assault. That is a nonprofit corporation. It receives much of it, all of its money from federal or state grants through Fond du Lac County. So it is running largely on tax dollars. It also gets some United Way money, but largely from the government. And it has a contract with the County Department of Social Services. It's a contract entity. I would submit to you that that organization's work is good work. It's probably public, in the public interest work, but I don't think it's public business. I think it's something that is still private and should be kept so. So if you fashion a definition of quasi-government, I would urge some caution there that it would not encompass these type of organizations, because I think there is no intention that they be subject to the open records and open meetings law. On that point, I see my time is almost up. I would like to make one point also on the standard that is, whatever standard is developed by this court, and again urge that it only have a prospective effect and not retroactive. The Buswell case, which came up, Justice Bradley, I believe, authored. In that case, there was a bright line test that was struck down and a reasonableness test was put in its place. But there had been at least a test that had been in existence and had been followed. In this case, we don't even have that. We really don't have a definition. We have discussion of what is the proper definition. But why we don't even have a test to strike
down. Why do you want a prospective only? What difference does it make practically?
Practically, because if it's retroactive, someone will come in tomorrow and ask for all the records of the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation on every discussion they had with every prospective employer who wanted to come into the city of Beaver Dam.
And what's the matter with that?
Because it's not government business.
Well, but if the court says it is government business, why apply it only prospectively? What's the matter with opening up the old records?
Because those records would have information given to the Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation, most likely, by these companies, which in a sense were our clients, given to us in some confidence.
Well, that's another issue. Isn't there anything in the open records law that protects that? I know there's a trade secret exemption. Isn't there anything else that would protect confidential business information that shouldn't be public?
Well, there's section 19.85(1)(e), which is in the open meetings section, which I suppose could be applied to the open records also, mm-hmm. talks about deliberating on public business.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that could be invoked. It potentially opens up, future lawsuits, future claims as to trying to define then which of those records are public business. I think that would be a considerable burden for not only this corporation, but mm-hmm. Development corporations mm-hmm. possibly throughout the state to have to go through that. It would be with a very limited staff.
Are you concerned about any forfeitures or fines? Because not about the individual, because that's not before us, isn't that right?
The individuals who were sued in our case,
right.
They have been dismissed without
right.
prejudice, but
mm-hmm.
the Attorney General has the possibility of reopening it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But as in Buswell, I believe an individual could only be charged if they knowingly violate the open meetings law, and I don't think there's any way that we could say that these individuals knowingly did so, since we're not even able to come up with a definition.
As I've listened to the arguments here, it strikes me that the standards that the court would do might be a list of factors. And some of the factors would be the ones that you have set forth, namely, if I can find my notes, who controls day-to-day, what power to bind the community, who created it, who are the officers and directors, who appoints them, is it self-perpetuating, where's the money, was it, et cetera. And I would think that the state would maybe look at the same factors, and we might add them. Seems to me that the difference between state and Beaver Dam Area Development Corp is how you balance and weigh these factors. And no standard, I think, that the court would set forth would say, well, you weigh where the money comes from as a 90% factor, you weigh who appoints them as a 3% factor. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So that in any particular case, when you put all of them out, they might have different weights because you have to blend them all. So isn't this case really an application of standards that are set forth in all of these AG opinions and in McQuillan? And you might make a long list and say, including but not excluding others.
And that's why, yes.
You then apply it.
I would agree with that, and that's why in my opening remarks I said we tended to agree with that part of Attorney General Doyle's opinion, where he said this is a fact-based, case-by-case inquiry, where you need to look at those list, if you will, of factors and apply them against the facts. And it's our strong belief that when you do that in this case, you come to the one and only conclusion, and that is Beaver Dam Area Development Corporation is not a quasi-governmental body.
So one area development corp might be and another might not be.
Very possible. Thank you.
Could I ask you one last
question? Justice Prosser.
Justice Bradley made an inquiry, I think, of your opposing counsel about 1982, where a governmental body and then quasi-governmental corporation exception, the Bradley Center and some other things. How do you explain that?
I don't know. It seems to me that is almost a more restrictive definition. They seem to, and I don't know what the makeup of the Bradley Center Corporation is. I know it runs the home of the Bucks and Marquette Warriors, and why that needed to be carved out, I don't know. I can only anticipate that there must have been some funding issues there that they wanted it cut out. But I can't explain that, why they cut it out in that fashion. I would say on the question was also brought up on 89380, and just very briefly, that the BDADC has never asserted itself as subject to 89380 and therefore can avail itself of the immunity contained in that statute. In fact, our contract specifically says that we will purchase insurance to cover any claims of that type, and we also agree to indemnify and hold harmless the city. So rather than availing ourselves of that particular statute, we have, in a sense, done the opposite. We have taken precautions to buy insurance for that protection.
So has municipalities, even though they're there are limits on liability, and
they
we've
do.
Said doesn't
do.
Matter.
Well, they do because they have a $50,000 cap then under 89380.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Justice Rogensack, did you have a question?
No, thank you.
Okay. Attorney Burkett Brist, please. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. May it please the Court, in my 5 remaining minutes, I'd like to hit a few highlights based upon the questions submitted to opposing counsel. First of all, I would most respectfully submit that we keep hearing how terrible it would be for the competition in an area if there was public knowledge about the fact that certain types of negotiations were ongoing. And I would, with all due respect, submit, when did we decide that competition is bad in a community when it's seeking to attract economic development? development to its area. We have plenty of examples in this state of publicly funded, publicly run economic development entities that do the economic development functions for governments around this state very well. Milwaukee has done it well within the confines of the 1991 Attorney General's opinion. The Wisconsin and Housing and Economic Development Authority, the state's flagship for business development, does it well within the confines of a statute which is unique to that entity, but it, in fact, is consistent with the state's open meetings and public records law.
Counsel, I did want to ask you about that, because if I understand opposing counsel's argument correctly, what I heard him saying is not that competition is bad, but that companies would be less likely to freely discuss with the development officials if they knew that the discussions would become public exactly what their plans were. And I was going to ask you how that would factor in, taking into account the obvious public purposes of having open government and the citizens' interest in whatever development would take place in that area. How do you factor in this other issue of whether or not the companies then would be forthcoming when they would come to the table to negotiate? And how does that weigh into any balancing aspects that we should be looking at under the 1991 test?
I would submit that ultimately, if all of the negotiating activities and all of the funding is being paid for by the taxpayers of the community, ultimately the nature of the public funding, while not an overriding consideration, ought to be given weight in that analysis. And if it's being done privately by an economic development group with private business community funds, you know, funds contributed by members of the business community, that's one thing. The exceptions under the open meetings and public records law, while that negotiation is in process, should be able to provide sufficient protections and appears to be able to do so in the numerous examples that I have noted. Secondly, it is true that the Walmart situation may have been an exceptional situation, but those are the kinds of facts that bring us before this court and the kinds of circumstances in which this court often is asked to render decisions. The agreement entered into, the 20-year binding agreement between the city and this entity, makes this corporation virtually a captive of the city. And the record at docket 42 that I pointed you to before shows that this entity does negotiate with many, many businesses other than just the Walmart Corporation. So while this may have been a large situation for this community, it certainly was not a completely unique one. I would also like to point out that all monies that this corporation has when it dissolves will revert to the city of Beaver Dam. And that was an amendment to their articles of incorporation. That was not even originally in their articles. And I think that speaks volumes as to how the city views the importance of being able to recoup those funds when this entity's mission is ultimately completed. Finally, I would like to point out that this court has on numerous occasions had to define undefined terms, as you've already noted, but you've done it within the context of the open meetings law. You've had to define what meeting meant. Many of us wouldn't have guessed that that would be ambiguous, but obviously we all know that it turned out to be, and I think the court can do that function in this case as well. In the context of a meeting, I would remind the court that this court has multiple decisions, the State v. Showers decision, Lynch v. Conta, in which it held that the final decision-making authority or the power to bind is not the ultimate issue as to whether or not governmental business is being conducted. Lastly, I would like to spend a moment talking about factors. And when we get to the issue of function, effect, and status, I think the factors that were in the 1991 Attorney General's opinion are certainly good factors to take into account. But what we're all really talking about, I think, falls into about four categories. How an entity is constituted, how the entity is funded, with funding being an important consideration, maybe not the overriding one, but certainly a very important one. What the entity's stated purpose is, that is, whether or not it's a public purpose, and the degree of governmental delegation. How does it function? And that's not just the power to bind, but what does it do? In this case, the Beaver Dam had complete negotiating authority on behalf of the city. I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Council. Thank you, Ms. Birkett-Brisk, Mr. Cechlovich, on your arguments today on a very interesting case that once again raises the open records, open meeting law. which are so much part of the state of Wisconsin. Thank you for your excellent arguments and your briefs. That concludes our hearing on 068P662, State versus Beaver Dam Area Development Court. The court will take a few minutes recess so the students who are planning to leave have an opportunity to leave and that we have a new group of students coming in. We are in recess.